This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Transgender Day of Remembrance was established in 1999 by Gwendolyn Ann Smith following the murder of a fellow trans woman, Rita Hester. It's a day to remember all of the people we lost throughout the year because of acts of transphobic violence, to grieve as a community and to strengthen our community bonds.
There are already over 100 transgender victims listed on the Transgender Day of Remembrance website for 2017. However, the actual statistics on transgender deaths are difficult to know.
Over the past 12 months, 325 people, predominantly trans women of colour, have been murdered. That's one person every 26 hours.
When talking about statistics regarding trans people, it's important to remember that many countries do not ever accurately report hate crimes, and the numbers reported could actually be much higher.
Earlier today, I spoke to Bobak Sayed, a writer, mixed media artist and community organiser for the Afghan diaspora, and co-editor of Archer magazine, and we discussed trans narratives and the role that grief plays in the trans community. Trans Day of Remembrance this year comes directly after our big postal survey, Yes Vote, and all of those celebrations. How does it feel to you coming straight out of that joyous feeling in the queer community straight into a day of mourning?
I think that for many trans people in particular, the Yes Vote announcement evoked a lot of mixed feelings, because in some ways it's a giant frontier that the queer community has surpassed now at great expense to our mental health and our livelihood. And so I think it's actually fitting that a day of mourning should come after it, because it also serves as a reminder amidst all the celebrations and the joy of a successful campaign that, in fact, a lot of the time, the members of the queer community who suffer the most, whose livelihoods are most greatly impacted and threatened, are trans people, and that queer liberation cannot happen and gay liberation cannot happen without the support and emancipation of trans people as well.
How does it make you feel seeing the lists being read out of the names of the people who have been killed throughout the year? It's obviously very important to acknowledge and mourn people who have died, but having the names sort of read out in this way in these really public forums can be pretty confronting.
It's quite confronting. I think there are people from all across the world, and I think something that it evokes in me is the particular realization that many, many of those names are trans women of colour from across the world. And it's certainly not a coincidence that specifically womanhood is threatened and persecuted the most, and specifically the womanhood of trans women of colour. So I think when I read those names aloud, something they all share is the fact that the cost of their transness and them living their truth was their life, but also that their race was inextricably tied into that livelihood.
Does it ever frustrate you that our main sort of trans celebration is a day of grief? Does that push the wrong message, or is it important to make sure that people who aren't part of the trans community can see that we do have a lot of issues in the community, and it's mostly coming from externally to the community?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and it's something I think a lot about. One of the reasons why I appreciate there being another trans day of visibility that is complicated as well, because often trans narratives and specifically cis understanding of trans lives are steeped in accounts of suffering and death and mortality, which fails to kind of encompass the complexity and joys of transness as well. And so I think a day of remembrance has to also take into account the beauty, joy, and community that many trans people also experience, that is also central to their livelihoods.
Do you think it's hard to push that message of joy and our lives being, you know, worth living, basically, when we do sort of have misery as our overarching theme in life? I can't really think of a media depiction of a trans person that isn't steeped in misery.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem, actually, because I think there are so many different ways to be trans, and there's so many different kind of access points and people who have different privileges of having access to hormones earlier, or who don't wish to have access to hormones and can exist happily in their non-binary identities without necessarily passing or necessarily looking or acting a certain way. So I think part of that problem is about representations of transness and how they have informed and infiltrated into the popular imagination and kind of distorted who the trans person is and how they are depicted.
In amongst all of that, in our media landscape and our just general lives as trans people, what should we be expecting of the cis people in the LGBT community or cis heterosexual people? What should we be asking them to do to create a better community space for us and to raise our voices?
It's interesting because what I've heard cis people and I think prevailing perspectives on the matter suggest that trans voices and narratives and histories are getting louder and louder and taking up more space than ever before. I think that's just true to some degree, but I think what that truly represents is that slowly trans people are taking up the space that they have always been denied and excluded from, and more specifically that trans people are telling their own stories and not having accounts of their lives told about them without them. And so I think like the idea of the trans tipping point, or that we are gaining access to services and media representations, is perhaps a bit flawed, because I think that we have been telling our stories and we have been active movers and primary movers and shakers of queer liberation for decades. In fact, centuries in certain parts of the world.
Well, Stonewall was kicked off by a trans woman of colour.
Absolutely, exactly. Marsha P. Johnston, Sylvia Rivera. I think it's important to remember those names. But what this ultimately testifies to is that trans people have been here, have been fighting, and have been losing their lives at disproportionate rates to everyone else in the queer community. But the unfortunate reality is that cis people have not been listening. And so when people ask me about what advice I can give to people who don't identify as trans, I think the prevailing take-home lesson is these people are talking and are starting conversations and are engaging in historical discourse. And what needs to happen is very simple but also very unnecessarily complex task of listening to us about our needs. It sounds a lot simpler than it is, It's really like, it shouldn't be that complicated, but alas, harder than it sounds.
As you were saying, there does seem to be a perception that there is more trans voices and trans people around becoming more visible. But with that visibility comes a greater risk and a greater danger and a larger backlash. And we've already seen that with this year, I think, in America at least, having one of the highest rates of homicides of transgender people, particularly transgender women. Should we be looking to our cis allies to be protecting us, to be trying to find solutions with us, or does this have to be from our own community?
I think both. For cis people who have access and power of services and institutions, part of that responsibility of allyship involves stepping away from the mic and the boardroom, perhaps, and giving up those roles and positions to trans people. Also, I think visibility is a very treacherous terrain for allies to be pushing trans people into before they're ready. And I think that's an ongoing issue, is this idea that like visibility is the right direction. Visibility is something that all trans people need to be moving towards in order to affirm and live their true trans lives. When, for many trans people, and for many trans men in particular, visibility is actually not an option, or not, well, their transness is not necessarily visible because they can pass. And so they have the privileges of providing that, sharing their transness at will, but not having it taken from them in public by people they don't choose to share it with. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that visibility should be a step, ideally, that people elect to adopt, and not one forced upon them, especially by allies with this kind of delusion that visibility is better always, when in fact, like as trans feminine people and trans women know better than anyone else, visibility equals danger and harassment and insecurity, as much as it means, as much as it can mean living your truth as well. something that has irked me today is someone wished me a happy trans day of remembrance.
Oh my God.
And I think I'm like, it's like such an obvious faux pas, but I think perhaps for a cis listener audience space, primarily at least, it could be useful as they're like learning about Trans Day of Remembrance and trying to demonstrate their allyship that allyship is not wishing someone a happy Trans Day of Remembrance.
It's not a happy occasion.
You know, sounds obvious. Yeah, it's not a happy occasion. It sounds obvious, but like, you know, again, a gentle but urgent reminder, supports trans people doesn't look like saying happy Trans Day of Remembrance to someone and thinking you've done your good deed for the day.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.